I woke up this morning not feeling in touch with myself. I woke up to my newborn crying, changing a diaper, burping. And there's something about a newborn crying. It's not a pleasant sound. And sometimes, if I'm not careful, I can start to dissociate with the moment, with myself, with her. It happened with my first kid too. A lot worse because it was my first time around, and I think now I'm a little bit more conscious and aware of it, but it's like I zone out a little bit. And instead of being present, I kind of switch that conscious part of my brain off, and like I almost purposefully try to go numb so I'm not empathizing with the newborn. You know, her pain is not my pain. Whatever she's mad about, I'm not mad about. Do the diaper change as quick as possible. I feel a lot less, feel less close to my newborn and my toddler when I dissociate from the moment when he's throwing a tantrum or she's crying. That's a hard moment to be in. It makes me feel like things are a little overwhelming, like things are kind of caving in, collapsing in, like I'm losing myself. I'm losing how I used to dress, or how I used to speak, or how I used to act, or my dreams, or that time that I used to have to myself when I didn't have kids. And now with two, feels like that time I have by myself, the silence that I'm able to have, gets smaller each day. That's what it feels like. That's what it felt like. And so the morning kind of got going. I brought her over to my wife so she could eat. My wife made oatmeal, and my son and her were already at the table. Lately, I've been sleeping in with the newborn because I've been staying up a little bit later to do some extra stuff. Felt like I, you know, that time that I have to myself is fleeting, so I try to stay up a little bit later to get, you know, a few extra things done. You know, work or a workout, a meditation, or, you know, just something where it's me and my thoughts, and I can kind of reconnect. Then I got to work. Well, first there were some chores that needed to be done around the house, and that frustrated me because typically we get the dishes done the night before. And yesterday we went out to visit a town that we were interested in moving in. We didn't end up liking it, but you know, when we got home, we were all tired and we didn't do the dishes. So this morning had to do the dishes, and that frustrated me. Just the house isn't messy, but things were out of place, and that kind of frustrated me. Kind of like feeling just crowded, clustered, everything, you know, the baby's crying, the kid, you know, the toddler needs to play in his attention. And I think selfishly, I was just thinking, you know, where do I fit into all this? And that's where I kind of start to go numb. It's like, well, you know, I'll just let go. And there are things that I have to do, and I'll do them. I might not, you know, be enjoying them right now. I might not be in the moment, but, you know, I still got to get through them. So I kind of turn a switch and I kind of dissociate a little bit. And I kind of let myself go to it. And I think that is the answer to difficult situations. Not necessarily going numb. I think just doing what you have to do. I think you have to transcend yourself at times for the greater purpose at hand, the greater task, the greater priority. This morning it was my kids. A lot of the time it's the kids, but it's also the relationship I have with my wife. It's also the house, you know, work, business, and I tend to put myself on hold, the things that I need to do for myself. I tend to put them off. And then I get resentful at everything else because I put myself off. And that's not exactly working for me. Because I don't want to resent my kids. I don't want to resent my wife. I don't want to resent work. I want to enjoy them. I want to be present for them. I'm thankful for them. I love them. But like, we also have to make time for ourselves. We also have to remember to do the things that we have to do for ourselves. And I think it's a lot easier to do things for other people, because when a baby's crying, it doesn't stop crying until you pick them up or you change them or you feed them or you burp them. It doesn't stop. But as an adult, if you're kind of crying on the inside, or there's, you know, something that you need, you know, you might need to eat, you might need to burp, you might need to meditate or calm down or breathe or relax. But, you know, it's not like if you don't do it, you know, there's going to be a constant reminder that you're not doing it. It's going to be a lot more subtle than a newborn screaming their head off. So it's a lot easier to kind of ignore your internal signals and what you need, which then leads you to resent everything around you because you feel like everything around you is keeping you from doing what you need to do for yourself. And in a way, that's not untrue. However, blaming everything around you isn't a solution. Especially when there are responsibilities that you decided to take on, like, you know, my kids and my marriage, the home we have. Chores need to get done. The grass needs to get mowed. Ditches need to get cleaned. House needs to be swept. Kids need to be taken care of. Relationship needs to be maintained. And they're all things that I wanted, and I do willingly. And so when I end up resenting them, it's a guilty feeling. It's almost a disgusting feeling. Like, how could I resent the things that I love most? You know, why am I not able to step up to the plate right now and not just do the things that I need to do, but be present for them, enjoy them, you know? Provide a good example for my son and my daughter, and, you know, just have a good attitude, just slap a smile on. I'm sure this feeling, whether you have kids or not, I'm sure it's not foreign to you, where you just kind of go through the day zombie-like, just doing what you have to do, but not really enjoying any of it, and maybe even resenting what you have to do or where you are or who you've become in the process of expanding your life. And do I have an answer? Sort of. I think it's not dissociation. It's the transcendence. So instead of being numb, you know, just feel it. You know, I think I tried to shut myself down today, hearing my newborn cry and just take care of it. But I ended up, I think her anger, if you haven't been around a newborn or a baby or a toddler or just kids in general, they get pretty upset. They get pretty rageful. And it's not exactly at you. It's just like this pure emotion, sadness, rage. And I think as a parent, it's very difficult, or even if you have a friend or a parent that's like that, you know, kind of not. I think as you get older, you become an adult, you can project those feelings onto other people. And you have to watch out for that, especially when people are projecting things onto you. But in the case of my kids, they're not consciously projecting their emotions onto me. But we also have to be aware that whatever emotion is going on in someone else, whatever someone else is going through, whether that be a newborn or an adult, it is going to affect you. You know, typically if our brains are working at a normal capacity, you know, we're kind of wired as social creatures to be aware of what other people are feeling, to have empathy, to realize if the person in front of us is angry or not. We want to register those threats. If someone's sad, we want to be able to, you know, console them. You know, women especially, I think, because they have kids and they're the primary caregiver. So my wife is a lot more receptive to how the kids are feeling. It's not like I don't know what the kids are feeling, but she describes it as when the kids are in pain or they're crying, she physically feels it. I don't physically feel it, but I can understand it and I can see it. I can empathize with it, but it's not to the same extent. But man, woman, whoever you are, we still have these mechanisms inside us that mirror. So this morning, all that rage from my newborn, even though I tried to shut it out and be numb about it, I still absorbed it. I didn't allow myself to feel angry, but I still absorbed the anger. And instead of being able to express it or be in the moment and just kind of roll with it and flow with it, I absorbed it and I held it for longer than I should have. I held it on for most of the morning. So even when she was done crying, I didn't want to hold her. And I was holding her, but I didn't want to be holding her because I had absorbed that anger. And you don't exactly want to hold people or console people or love people when you're angry. I didn't know what to do with the anger. And so what I ended up doing was doing what I normally would have done. Whether I was angry or not, I held her. I walked into the kitchen. My wife had oatmeal. I passed her on to my wife because she was hungry. I made a cup of coffee. And then I did the dishes, still angry about that. Didn't really engage with my son much, but, you know, I went over, said good morning, gave him a kiss, rubbed his head. And then sooner or later, just acting normal and just going through the motions, I started to feel present again. You know, I got to work. I did the things that I needed to do. I got some thoughts out of my head. I journaled a little bit, and that anger's not here anymore. And I'm in the moment now. I don't think we can expect ourselves to be in the moment 100% of the time. I don't think that's realistic for most of us, anyways. But I do think that's an ideal that we can shoot for and something that we can practice. And when we're not feeling that way, when we're not present, doing what we would do if we were present, and just doing them to the best of our abilities. There was a period of my life where I took a lot of psychedelics. I did a lot of mushrooms and I took a lot of LSD. Probably over, you know, 2 or 3 years. And then 1 year was like pretty much almost every day, every other day. And the lesson that I was kind of learning today or re-experiencing today kind of reminded me of that time period. There are sometimes, I mean, I guess you might feel this on, if you're smoking weed or you're drinking out any drug, really, even caffeine sometimes, but I think psychedelics really, really kind of push it to the limit. 'Cause you have, I think that extra capability or capacity for consciousness. Sometimes it put me in a mode where I might have been so conscious or just so absorbing all the little details around me that it was so overwhelming that I could barely function. 'Cause it was just so overwhelming. Like your senses are just on overload. And I put myself in a lot of situations like maybe eating dinner with my family, talking to friends, going out, being somewhere that I'm not used to being while in that extraordinarily open and receptive conscious mind state. And I think that's where bad trips come in. You don't know how to handle it. Everything's coming at you. It's overwhelming. And then you try to hold on to something solid. You try to make sense of it. So you try to make it mean something. And I've seen a lot of people, you know, they start crying or they get scared. Or I had one friend that just was on the highway and hopped out the car and just started running on the highway. There was one time where I felt like I was having a heart attack, and I was at a party in high school, and I thought I was dying. And I had my friend call my dad to come pick me up. That's, you know, I was high as shit, doing stuff I wasn't supposed to be doing, but the only thing solid that I felt was that I was dying and I needed to call, you know, one of my parents to come get me. They weren't, you know, that's a whole nother story. They weren't happy about that. But, you know, what I think that's where the bad trips stem from. Things are so overwhelming and you just try to cling to something, even if it's bad, even if it's negative, even if you're misguided, even if you have the wrong idea, it's a lot better to feel, you know, in control or at least mentally aware of a bad situation than not aware or not in control of anything at all. So what I learned to do through a whole bunch of trips is just clinging to what I should be doing. You know, I might be high as shit in this library, but what do people do in a library? They read books, they study. And if I can read books and I can study and I can look like I'm doing, I can act like I'm doing it and I can actually do it, then no one in here is going to know that I'm losing my shit right now. All I'm doing is reading a book. And eventually, once the drugs wear off, you actually are just sitting there reading a book and no one knows anything different. Now, you might be reading a book. You might actually be reading it. You might actually just like be looking at the words, like every individual word and how they make up sentences or how the letters make up words. And you might be thinking of, you know, the grain of the paper, the feeling, the texture, the sound that the pages make, why the book is called what it's called. Like, you might be thinking of all these things that you normally might not be thinking of. But in the end, you're sitting there interacting and reading a book, interacting with and reading a book. And you know, on a hike, you might be looking at everything and feeling overwhelmed, but what do people do on trails when they're hiking? Well, they just walk. No one else knows what's going on with you. And if you just act normal, things will eventually feel normal. You don't have to dissociate with it. You don't have to feel numb. You can feel it, and it can feel overwhelming, and you might not know how to handle it. But if you can think of the thing that you're supposed to be doing, and how you should be doing it, and just do that, no matter what you're feeling or what you're thinking, you can get through the moment. There's a lot of times, you know, that I felt like I was going to die. There was a lot of times I felt like I was going to die at the peak of a trip, and it would freak me out. And the one thing that I knew I could do was just sit there and breathe and think. And eventually, just sitting there and breathing and almost meditating and just kind of letting go, eventually the storm passes or that peak passes, that feeling of existential dread passes, and well, you just get back to whatever you were doing. So whether it's something small or something big, no matter where you are, what you're dealing with, I think you can always control how you're kind of acting through it or thinking through it or feeling through it, even when those feelings and thoughts are overwhelming. Just cling to, you know, kind of let go maybe. Let go a little bit, relax a little bit, breathe a little bit, and then just ask yourself, what am I supposed to be doing right now? There might be some times when you don't know what you should be doing. You don't know what you're feeling. You feel bad. You feel negative. I feel like that on the couch sometimes when I don't have the energy, or I don't feel like I have the energy to really do anything. And then my baby starts crying and I just have to get up and go hold her or hold him. And I have to do something for my wife, or I have to do some work. And that's just what I go do. I don't think it has to be super complicated. Like, just doing what you have to do. Just doing what you have to do. And doing it. Even if you're not there, just doing it until you get there. And I think we can practice that, and eventually it's a lot easier when you're not feeling there to get there, or when you're not feeling present to become present, to tap back into it, to get back in touch with yourself, to connect with yourself again. But, you know, sometimes we're not going to feel that. And instead of letting those moments derail us, we hang in there. We don't go off the deep end. A lot of the time when I was younger, when I used to feel like that, I wanted to feel something. I wanted to do something. I was angry. I was mad. I was depressed. I was anxious. And I didn't want to be alone with that. And I didn't want to be where I was, and I didn't want to be doing the things that I was doing. So I tried to distract myself. And you can imagine how a young man might distract himself. I'm sure you have particular ways that you distract yourself, or used to distract yourself. And that's what I would do. And I would derail myself. I would spite myself. I would get in my own way. I would distract myself. You know, if I can't feel present doing what I should be doing or what I am doing right now, I'll go find something to be present for, even if it's negative. And it's kind of like that same lesson I learned from the trips. You know, even if what's going on is so overwhelming, I can't find anything positive, or I can't figure out what I should be doing, I'll cling or I'll grab for something negative, because at least I can be present for it, and I can almost mold myself into this. I can do this. I can imagine this, and I can be here for this, even when it's negative and it doesn't help you at all. And it took a very long time for me to just let those feelings pass. Instead of reaching for some weed, instead of reaching for alcohol, and I still have a beer every now and again, and I still drink coffee, so it's not like it's not like I'm completely clean and I live my life, you know, completely on the straight and narrow. I have my vices, but I'm not reaching for the weed anymore. I'm not reaching for my phone anymore. I'm not reaching to go connect with people I shouldn't be connecting with. I'm not wasting my time. I'm not allocating energy to things that aren't going to pay off. I've learned to just sit with it. I'm not feeling present. I don't feel good. I feel depressed. I feel anxious. Fine. If that's what I have to feel to balance out all the joy and all the shit in my life that is decent, all the moments that I am present for, I think that's a fair trade. I don't need to further the negative emotions with negative action, because that just digs a deeper hole. And it took me too long to figure that out. But I will tell you that as soon as I did figure that out, and as soon as I implemented it consistently, I had a different life. You can dig yourself a hole, and you can dig yourself out, or you can climb out, but you're not going to be able to climb out if you keep digging. You have to pick one or the other. You're either going to dig your hole, dig your grave, or you're going to climb out and live. And once you decide to just climb out, and you decide to live, and you decide to make progress, and you decide to address shit, you're not going to find yourself in that hole very often. And when you do, you're not going to dig yourself deeper. It's a lot better to stay still than it is to take a step back or to move in the wrong direction. So I don't think this is something that, you know, I'm going to resolve today. Something that's going to vanish today. But that's how you deal with it. You kind of transcend it. I don't mean being numb and, you know, dissociating. You plant yourself deeper, firmly. You continue to do what you need to do until you're back in alignment with who you are and you're back in the present. Wait that out. Be there. Get through it. And don't move backwards. Don't plant seeds that you don't want to grow.